And welcome back, one and all, to the Parish of the Patriots. This is the 323rd installment. Time keeps flying by, and I appreciate y'all coming back week in and week out. Must be getting something out of the show, which is always encouraging. And again, I do appreciate. I know most of y'all, virtually all of you, are return members of the congregation, and it does mean a lot that you get something out of it and come back. If you are new, I hope you'll stick with the whole show. If you consider yourself a Christian believer, the second half of the show should be a treat. Even if you're not, you may get something out of it. So I encourage you, just try to tough it out through the rest of the show. We do have a Christian-specific segment that's very roughly the midpoint of the show. Sometimes a lot earlier, sometimes a little later. But I aim for halfway through the show for that. So be sure and check it out. If you do get something out of the show, you know what I always say. Don't be shy. Pay those tithes. Got snail mail. That's it. That's it. There's Bitcoin and whatever addresses on the website. Those are Sven's from before he went away. I have no access to those, nor do I desire any access to those. I have snail mail. I assume you all know how to address an envelope. I do appreciate you addressing your envelopes. Let's get into the listener supporter mailbag. Triangle Whip. I always know when I pull out a card, it's probably Triangle Whip. GPD, seeing Europe being invaded kind of reminds me of the last several chapters of 2 Kings. Say hello to Sven. And again, that's from Triangle Whip. Sven, I before I forget, I have been in contact, regular contact with Sven. Written contact, whatever. And he's doing pretty well. At this point, we're late enough in the game. I haven't given too many updates because I don't really, how do I want to put this? There beeth troublemakers out there that would jump at any opportunity to find a way to harass him and find a way to make his life more difficult. It's not that I don't want to share things with y'all. For starters, there's not really a lot to share, but he is doing well and moving forward. Getting closer to more and more of a state of independent living, shall we say. The end of the year, his parole, what we call parole, they have a different term over there. Like, they have a different term for everything over there. And, his parole be up and he'd be free man. He'd be literally a free man by the end of the year, God willing. And we're all looking forward to that. And then we can open up and have more of an open discussion. About how he's doing, but he is doing well, and I do appreciate it. I know he does. I just have to tell y'all on his behalf that he does very much appreciate y'all keeping him in mind and in your prayers and whatnot. The good news is, I said this. I believe I said this on a recent Daily Nationalist show. The good news is, since he does have more time on his hands, he's finally given in. I was trying to convince him of the merits of watching anime for years, and he wouldn't give in, but see, now, let's see what else we got. GPD, please use this small tithe towards your ministry as Yahweh the Christ and you see best fit. I thank you for putting yourself out there the way you do in Christ's love, which is something this wicked world needs a whole lot more of. And that is from CJ. Appreciate it. Appreciate it, CJ. We do what we do here. Like I said, we do it for Christian specifics. That's the whole point of this show. It's a highlight. It's going to be good this week. I am feeling good. We're good. It's going to be good this week. You're not going to want to miss it. I can feel it in my bones. If I had to cut down and do only one thing, that's what I would do. The stuff we're going to do here, we have a fun conversation here in the first part of the show. And that may even be y'all's favorite thing. I don't know. But I could live without even doing the first part of the show. I live without doing the Daily Nationalist. That second part of the show, the Christian specific segment, that's why I do this. That's it. This is the most meaningful thing I do. Making installments in the kingdom of God, so I'm not going to be broke. I've spent enough time being broke in this life. I want to be broke in the kingdom of God. Storing up my treasure. storing up my treasure, getting ready. That wraps up our listener supporter mailbag, by the way. One of the things I find funny is, you know, all they've elevated, you know, people talk all this crap about this democracy, which is, you know, I hate this so-called democracy system they have. I hate it. I really, it's just another name for oligarchy. But anyway, I don't want to get off in the woods with that. What I did want to do is share an observation. I find it so humorous because this disconnect from reality. People talk and laud democracy. The democracy. You know, there's the quote, and I'm doing it off the top of my head. I'm not pulling it up because I'm lazy. I don't care that much about it. But you know, there's a quote attributed to Winston Churchill, and it was something like, you know, democracy is this messy form of government that's just absolutely terrible, but the only thing worse is all the other choices, or something like that. I butchered that up, but it probably deserves to be butchered up. I figure, like everything else, Churchill was probably drunk when he said that. You know, it is absolutely worst form of government, this democracy system. And what's funny to me is the media goes on about it, and people themselves will go on, you know, you're the threat to democracy. There's nothing worse you can be now, huh? A threat to our democracy. I love that. If you ever know, if you live long enough, you will notice. Let me put it that way. Because y'all are pretty smart. I do. I like to think y'all are pretty smart. And if you're older, you've noticed. If you haven't noticed yet and you're younger, that's fine. That's normal. But when you live long enough, you notice. You notice these marketing terms. Our democracy. I remember when they first started using that. Our democracy. They run these things through marketing firms. And then they market it. And all of a sudden, all of them are using the same terminology. You know? Russia's full-scale invasion of the Ukraine. It's been basically very limited to the Donbass regions. Okay, it's full-scale invasion. Our democracy, or my personal favorite, our democracy values of who we are. Our values, who we are. They always throw this, they put that terminology, this ownership, you know, it's our democracy. See, that's better than the democracy. If you say our democracy, that gives the listener a sense of ownership. Like they have a part in, this is theirs. This is theirs. They want to protect it because they have ownership of it. It's an old tactic, by the way. Car salesmen, when they first start, they train them when they're talking to a potential buyer and they're out there going for the test drive. They train them to say, you know, start talking about, you know, your car, man. You're gonna have a nice car. Your car. They ain't even bought the damn thing yet, and it's your car. You see, our democracy. We all own it together. We're all in this together. You and the politicians that are benefiting from all the graft and theft, you just don't get the same benefits. Heresy against the democracy is not allowed. It has become a religion. It's another form of false religion. I always say man has to have God. And so when they turn their back on God and reject God, all they do is they don't actually live without God. They just create a new one. That's what idolatry is. Even your most hardcore atheist, he's not an idolater. He's not an atheist. He's just, maybe he's made his God as himself. It's the ultimate in silly foolishness, masquerading as intelligence. But nevertheless, people will have a God. I can guarantee you. I don't care what somebody tells you. They can tell you they're agnostic. They can tell you they just don't know. They can tell you that they're a hardcore atheist and we absolutely came from monkeys by pure happenstance in an environment that just by pure coincidence happened to everything be created just as we need it to keep us alive and allow us to prosper. That was all just pure happenstance. I guarantee if you look hard enough, you can find their God. They got one. It isn't the Lord, but they've got one. People will talk on and on about the democracy and how wonderful. But you know what they want? They want a king. They want a king. How do I want to put this? Whatever stage you want to look at and the degradation of the U.S. government system that we live under, the branches, you know, the checks and balances, you know, the judicial branch and you've got the Congress and the administration. They're supposed to check and balance each other. And the people don't want no check and balance. People want a king. Technically, the president is just supposed to kind of oversee and administer. That's why I call it the administration. They're supposed to just administer all of these, you know, oversight, be the CEO, as it were, of these government administrations and make sure things run smoothly. But that ain't what people vote for every 4 years. They all act like they're voting for what? A king. If we just get our king in here, he's going to do this, that, and the other. One of the things that's really kind of a fairly, historically speaking, a recent development is this whole notion where these presidents, they do all of these executive orders. And it's so silly. You know, Biden gets in there and he does all these executive, well, he does it. But, you know, they put his corpse. Now, he's not dead, as far as I know. It may be. I don't know. But, you know, they rolled him in there and then used the auto pen to sign all of these executive orders to throw out all the stuff that Trump had done. And then Trump goes in there now and he signs a bunch of executive orders overturning the things that Biden did. No legislation happening, by the way, in this precious so-called the democracy. But ain't nobody complaining. They're just complaining when the other king is in there because everybody wants a king. They don't want no democracy. People want a king. People do. They want somebody. They want to be voting for somebody that's going to go in there and make decrees and make things happen. They're not voting like they're voting for somebody that's just going to just kind of make sure these government agencies continue to run over you smoothly. They want a king. They can sit there and make decrees and change things. That's why the Congress doesn't do anything. You know, the Congress knows this. So all they do is have hearings and grandstand in front of the cameras and steal money. Not directly, but yeah, they're all part of the graft. But the key people want a king. And rightly so. I'm not even being critical like people. But they won't admit it. That's what gets under my skin. You know, people sit there mouth about the democracy and how important it is. And this is going to be, I guarantee you, when they have the next presidential election, it will be what? Repeat after me, class. The most important election ever. Every one of these elections in my entire lifetime, which is getting to be fairly long, it seems like to me, has been the most important election ever. First Bush, second Bush, Clinton, Obama, name all of them. That's always the most important election ever in the whole history. The whole future of this country depends on which king you're going to put in there. They don't act like they're voting for a simple administrator. That doesn't have any zing to it. There's no romance to it. The people, because the people want a king, they vote like they're voting for a king because that's what they want. Why don't just give the people a damn king? Oh, because that would be an authoritarian. It's less authoritarian if you're ruled over by BlackRock or whatever. But anyway, you can't have a king. Okay. The shortcomings of this retarded system are always so apparent. I laugh because other countries that have a little less of the democracy system and have something closer to kingship, to an emperor. You see, there's times when you can see, it becomes clear what a disadvantage this system actually puts. It's a crippling system, this so-called democracy. Other countries run into difficulties trying to negotiate terms with this country because they sit down and they negotiate with our president. And then in 3 years, he's gone and the next guy comes in and just throws it all out. You know, there's no continuity to it. I was reading a story recently relating to, I don't know, I think it was something with Trump and the Chinese, and it was obviously, you know, I mean, it just made it obvious the disadvantage, because Trump is going to be in there for what, 3-4 years now. The Chinese, with their system, because they essentially have an emperor now, you know, they essentially have an emperor or king, and yes, there's other things around it. They make 5-year, 10-year, 50-year, 100-year plans. And then they meet in every so many years to check up. Okay, you're supposed to be in charge of the 30-year plan for this. Where are you at with that? And people are actually held accountable. They are able to make long-term plans because they have continuity. Because they have something closer to a monarchy. You know, again, not a necessarily a hereditary monarchy. There can be other sorts. But they have essentially, they have that stability to be able to make these long-term plans. Sure, you got Trump shows up and he's railing and ranting about tariffs and this and that. And they all know, well, that's not even going to be just a bump in the road to the 30-year plan to do what they want to do, what they want to accomplish. They may, you see, the so-called authoritarian government, they make long-term plans, 30, 40, 50, 100-year plans. And with the U.S., it's just like our economy, you know. Our economy used to be geared towards long-term growth, and now it's just geared towards if I can scam some money off of somebody today. You know, everything is some sort of, I always say the whole economy in the U.S. now is some sort of financial scam. I mean, anything you deal with, from healthcare to whatever, you can find the money scam in there. You know, the stock market itself is one giant money scam. It has nothing to do. It used to be geared towards, oh, well, this manufacturer, this company that manufactures whatever, they can raise money by selling stocks in the company and build bigger factories and expand their business. Now the stock price in and of itself, everything in this country is day trading, has been reduced to day trading. That is how long-term the democracy plans have gotten now. It's essentially day trading. Everything is, can I scam a few bucks by flipping this today? Meanwhile, these other countries are able to make 50-year plans, and we wonder why they're doing well and us not so much. Do you remember right after the January 6th thing happened? And there was that guy that was there, and he was smart. He saw the handwriting on the wall, and he took off on a business trip. This was before they really got into rounding up anybody that was in the near vicinity of that January 6th thing, started throwing them in prison and in special prisons and basically torturing them and shit. Before that got started, this guy saw the handwriting on the wall. You remember that? And he flew, I believe it was to Italy on business, and made his way across Europe and crossed into Belarus illegally. And then once he was detained by the border guards there, asked for asylum, and Lukashenko gave him asylum in Belarus. Do y'all remember that? I'm sure you did. Now, fast forward to today, and Trump is back. Mysteriously, even though the election was stolen the last time, he's mysteriously back now. And he did finally pardon the January 6th guys. You know, he did. He finally pardoned the January 6th guys. And I'm glad he did. That was like the least he could do. Would have been better if he would have preemptively pardoned them before he left, you know, like the Biden people did before he left. But nevertheless, he didn't. But anyway, he did. He did finally pardon the January 6th people. Have you seen any stories? Whatever happened to the guy that went to Belarus? Since America is the wonderful democracy system that everybody in the world just is dying to have, I haven't seen any stories where that guy has been begging to come back to America now. Have you? He's had 4 years of living in Belarus under the horrible authoritarian system. And Trump has pardoned the January 6th people. He can come back. Why isn't he coming back? Maybe living with a king is better. I knew when they're back when Trump first got in there and they said, oh, he's going to probably pardon the January 6th people. I knew right then and there, though. I thought that guy ain't coming back because he's had 4 years of not living under the democracy system. Imagine if we, yeah, anyway. And again, it's funny because they'll attack you and say, oh, you're against democracy. You're against democracy. And if you look, they are too. Nobody likes this system. What benefit are you getting out of it? I don't get me wrong. I mean, you do the best you can, live the best life you can, whatever, regardless of your circumstances. That's how life is. You know, you find yourself in the circumstances that you have under the government that you have or whatever, and you live the best life you can. Look, that's all you can do. But this idea that this system is somehow beneficial to you, if you're not part of that top percentage, I don't see it. I don't see it. What little advantages they've promised to us, they've whittled away, you know? Like, you know, the Constitution. Yeah, you got the Constitution here. And they're sawing away at it every day. And again, it just depends on which king, which perceived king, the people perceive the president like he's a king, which one is in there. You know, as far as if people support it or not. When the Biden people were in there, the other people were bitching and complaining because they're violating our First Amendment rights with this censorship. And now that Trump is the returned perceived king, they're pushing all of this, making anti-Semitism illegal. And they have those same people have no problem with it. And the people who were cheering censorship under the Biden regime, now they're the ones sounding the alarm about the First Amendment. This idea that you have these rights with conditions. If they're rights, then there should be no conditions. You see? Started when they started marketing all of that. Oh, but you can't yell fire in a crowded theater. And people accepted that nonsense. That was the beginning of the end. Like that was an argument. You're supposed to imagine being in a crowded theater and some asshole yells fire and there causes a stampede and everybody dies. That never actually happened as far as I know. But even if it did, let's just say that did. If people are so damn stupid, imagine the argument is people are so stupid that if you're in a crowded theater, someone can yell fire, even though there's no sign of fire, no smoke you can smell. And the claim is that as a group, people are so freaking dumb that they'll trample over each other in a panic. That's why we have to have democracy, because these same morons will have the perfect idea of who's best fit to run the country. Their lies always give themselves away, don't they? The truth always emerges. The people run the country. The same people that are supposedly so damn stupid that someone can yell fire in a crowded theater with no smoke, no fire, and they're all going to kill each other trying to get through the door, causing a panic. You see, you don't have rights. Not when you can have a condition. You have rights, but there's limits. One of the latest marketing terms of this, guardrails. We have to have guardrails on the First Amendment. See, that sounds like safety. Got to have safety. Guardrails on the First Amendment. Don't want you running off the road in a ditch. Why, if people have too much freedom of speech, they could run off the ditch. I don't get into that, but it's all a lie, my friends. It's all a lie. Don't get upset about it. Realize it for the BS that it is. continue to live the best life you can. And as a part of living the best life we can, we're going to go ahead and jump into the Christian specific segment. That'll get us better close. That will give us closer, if I say so myself. That will get us closer to living the best life that we can live. So let's do it. You know what to do. Get in there, fill those pews. Let's get into this week's sermon at the Parish of the Patriots. As a part of my own daily journey to try to understand and know God and grow in my own faith, I can't help but oftentimes learn by looking at the other side of the coin, by looking at the opposite, by looking at how corrupt downfall in this world, these societies we live in are. And in so doing, you can't help but wonder, you know, how do we get here? You know, we talk about it and such, but still you wonder how it's, there's so many things that, so many aspects of the world and society and people's thinking that have brought us to this failed state that we live in, this environment of sin and wickedness. I believe one of the things that just is guaranteed to lead people astray, because the people have been led astray, you know, because when we talk about, let me back up, because when we talk about something like society, you know, it's kind of like when politicians will talk about the people, you know, what the hell is that? The masses of people, the society. It loses any sort of meaning, because what we're talking about is actually the collective decisions of individual people. I say that again. Anytime you're talking about something on the macro scale, you're talking about collective decisions of individual people. That's why if you talk about group behaviors, if you say this group of people, they do this sort of thing, you're talking about, as a whole, the collective decisions of that group of people. Yes, it doesn't mean each individual person. You're talking about, you look at a group of people on the macro scale, on the large scale, as a group, they collectively tend to make this decision, if that makes any sense. When politicians talk about the people this or the people that, or what we're really talking about is individual people making individual decisions, but collectively they lead to this outcome. That's why I believe one of the most important things about understanding about this absolutely corrupt, failed system we live under and how it got here is to understand that regardless of who's pulling strings of power and the amount of propaganda and things such as that, if enough of the individual people collectively made the decision not to do that, but instead to stay facing and seeking the Lord. In other words, what you have, regardless of the things, the temptations, and you think of Eve in the garden, you know, yeah, Satan sweet-talked her, but she ultimately was the one that made the decision. It always works like that too, by the way. You see, again, on the macro scale, Satan sweet-talks everybody. But at the end of the day, you're still talking about individual people making decisions. In other words, there is no such thing as the people have decided to do this. No, it's individual people, one by one, decided to turn away from the Lord and listen to the sweet lies, have decided to go off and turn away from God's laws, God's rules for the very system he created that we live under. It's absurd when you think about it. Let's not listen to the system creator. Let's listen to these other people. And collectively, enough of them have made this decision on an individual basis that now we have this outcome. You know, we have this outcome. I think a lot of that is trying to create this idea of this huge mass, that's this blob that has taken up a mind of its own, is that desire to absolve ourselves of any responsibility. You know, the people will not be cast into hell. Individual people who have decided to turn against God, to turn away from God, and to seek the pleasures of this world, they will wind up in hell. Not the people, not the masses. There's no such thing. You're talking about individual people collectively, yes, then you can say the people, the masses, if that's what you know, you're trying to say. But as an entity, I guess is what I want to say. We're going to get to a point here in a minute, I promise. It doesn't exist. One of the ways that we've gotten here, people making that decision to turn away from God. See, there's a guaranteed formula. Because you know how the old saying goes, the road to hell is paved with good intentions, you know? That's how the devil works. You know, again, if you look at Eve in the garden, oh, if you eat the fruit, you're not gonna die. You'll become like God. You'll become God yourself. God just doesn't want the competition. You're so smart, you're so up with it. It's the same lie. It's the same lie that he's dressed it up a little different. What do I mean by that? Anytime, if you look at the state we are, many of the proposals that have got us here, the suggestions, the prompts, the sweet talking from the serpent, it's the same thing. You're more, you could look. In other words, when these ideas are proposed, they're never proposed with, hey, you want to destroy the society you live in, wind up living in a dystopian hellscape? You should do this because no one's going to agree to that, are they? No, it's always, man, this is going to be great. Man, you know what? We need more equality. You know what? We need more compassion. Only it winds up not being compassion. Because why? The devil's a liar and a murderer. Imagine that. He's lying. The devil tells you, devil says you're going to be like God. If you eat the fruit, you're going to be bored. This is going to be real compassionate and fair for people. He's a liar. But you've got to go along with the lie. And what makes you go along with the lie? When you look at something that means turning away from the Lord. Anytime. Let me back up. Let's read the 92nd Psalm, verses 5 through 6. O Lord, how great are thy works, and thy thoughts are very deep. A brutish man knoweth not, neither doth a fool understand this. Let's sink in. Write that down. That's the 92nd Psalm, verses 5 through 6. Re-reference it if you want. Anytime you're on a decision-making path that sounds real good, and you believe, anytime you decide that you're doing something, you're improving on what the Lord has established. You're more kind. You're more compassionate. You're more loving than God. He came up a little short in this area. I'm not trying to throw out God's laws. I'm trying to improve on them, you see, because God isn't just quite, he came up a little short in the loving and fairness, the fairness department. Oh, we get a lot of stuff. We've had a lot of stuff brought down around into this society in the name of fairness, haven't we? Fairness, that's just not fair. Look at this. We need to correct it because it's not fair. It's not fair. We got to fair. Fairness. What is this fairness thing they're always talking about? People don't like this. One of the reasons people, by and large, Christian people I'm talking about, by and large, have abandoned the Old Testament. You ask them, well, God, you ask them about the Old Testament. Well, I don't really read that. God was meaner back then. God just, like, God didn't understand. You see, in the Old Testament, he just didn't get it. Improve on things. God didn't understand. God was meaner back then. Anytime you think you're more compassionate, loving than God, you're in trouble. Because you're being lied to and you're buying into the lie. I mean, you can't do anything about someone lying to you, but you're buying into the lie. And that's something you do have control over. They have marketed so many things to us in the name of fairness. And yet we don't even know what that means. Fairness is not justice. You see, the Lord, one of the things I believe that is a key defining element of the Lord God Almighty is that he is just. Yes, love, biblical sense of love. Yes, this is also a key element of God. And you go into any church and get a sermon about love. It usually won't be very well defined, but you can get a sermon on love. But you're going to find very few and far between the sermon on justice. Another key element. Like, God is not one-dimensional. I mean, don't get me wrong. Love is a great thing. And biblical love is a great thing. God's love for us is an amazing and vast thing that we can't comprehend. I get that. But so many churches are so focused on that because it feels good. And they've simplified and dumbed it down to this point. It makes God, they paint God as though he's one-dimensional. Like there's just one thing. God is love. That is it. You know, you'll hear people say, you see it on church signs. You go by your church signs, they put those tacky temporary signs up there where they put clever sayings to try to get you to come in. And you say, God is love. It's like they might as well add, and that's it. Do you really think that God is love and that's it? Means nothing else. There's nothing else to the Lord except love. I call bullshit on that. God is reference back to those verses we just read. He's deep. His thoughts are deep. You can't comprehend. I believe one of the key elements of the Lord, aspects of the Lord, is he is just. You know, and people throw around terms like talking about people going, you know, just be tossed into hell. And a lot of people read that and insinuate from that somehow unfairly, look, nobody's going to wind up where they don't belong. God is just. He is absolute just. We see the serpent with his sweet words has convinced everybody to replace the concept of justice. Because if you have a real concept of justice, if you have a real concept and understanding of what justice means, I'm not talking about these people running around the street talking about, you know, justice. They're not talking about the actual definition of justice. They're talking about this other thing, fairness. It's not the same thing. It's not the same thing. God is just. But you see, the serpent has convinced everybody God's justice comes up a little bit short, you know? Don't you think you could improve on that? I mean, look over here. How is that fair? Fair? How is that fair? It's not fair. Instead of God's justice, instead of God's righteousness, we should seek to be more fair to everybody. And everybody winds up about, all these people wound up individually making the decision to abandon God's justice as inferior, to cast it off, to spit it out of their mouths and go whoring after this elusive concept of fairness. And they chase and chase and lust after it. And they never get it, do they? They never find it. They look and look and look and look and look and they can't find it. Looking for that fairness. Only there's more. It's just, we got to have more fairness. Sure, you've destroyed society in the name of being fair, but we're not fair enough yet. Don't worry. We'll live in a utopia soon once we get to the next level of fairness. In the Old Testament, when God established the ancient nation state of Israel, we had the laws and foreigners. You know, for instance, just to highlight this fairness versus justice thing. In ancient Israel, for instance, foreigners couldn't come in, aliens, as they would call them. You know, foreigners couldn't come in, other peoples couldn't come into the country and partake in, say, a lot of the religious things they went through, you know, because they're not them. They're a foreigner. They're an alien. They're not going to be able to partake in the inner workings of the nation because they're not of that nation. Again, nations have always been defined as a people. When you have a gathering of people here, you know, there's a reason. If you go to Africa, they call it the Zulu Nation. You're not going to go to the Zulu Nation and find Englishmen there. No, you're going to find Zulu, because that's what makes it the nation. That's how the concept of nation has always been understood, not this modern thing where it's some sort of economic zone where a bunch of people fight over limited resources and all get more poor. Well, there's a tiny percentage of people at the top that get very obscenely wealthy. But nevertheless, they couldn't partake in all of the things and the customs and the practices and the workings of the nation because they're not a part of that nation. They're a foreigner that has come there for whatever reason, and they can't partake. Heaven forbid, start running the government or something. They were limited on that. However, God's laws specifically stated that you cannot deny those same foreigners justice. You see, somebody look at that and say, well, that's not fair. They're living there too. They should be able to do all the things that the Israelites could do. That's not fair. But God said, well, they're not a part of that. But what God did say, he commanded the Israelites, you can't deny those people justice. You know, yeah, they're not you. They're not foreigners. That doesn't mean you can just knock them on the head and make them a slave or something because you decided you want to and they're foreigners. You cannot deny them justice. You have to treat them justly. Fairness always seems, this elusive concept of fairness always seems to lead people away from justice. Have you noticed that? Where does justice fit into this? Where's the justice? So you get less and less just and more of this so-called fairness. Only the fairness never seems to wind up with everybody being treated equally, does it? It winds up being the opposite. They'll give one group of people supposed special privileges, but when you look at them, they're just crumbs off the table. You know, it promotes the dogs fighting one another in the pen over a few scraps while that top 1% feasts at the table. They throw a little scrap in there and watch them fight. We're all just pit bulls. We're all just pit bulls in a dog ring for their entertainment, and people keep falling for the bait. Now, I want to go back and reread those verses again. 92nd Psalm, verses 5 and 6. O Lord, how great are thy works, and thy thoughts are very deep. You can't understand. So that's why the devil can trick people so easily. Because man, full of his pride, thinks he can understand everything about God. But God's thoughts are very deep. A brutish man knoweth not, neither doth a fool understand this. A brutish man and a fool, they don't understand this. In other words, they think they know. I know all about that. A good example of this, you know, and again, sadly, this is because, again, people who are already on some level a Christian believer, that's where I like to focus. You know, that's what I have in mind when I'm having this discussion, not people that are out here that have no clue. I always say, if you're not a believer and you want to listen to this stuff, more power to you. You know, maybe you will get something out of it and you'll be motivated, try to understand this. But that's, you know, I always have this, we have these discussions. I always have it in mind that you at least have some concept of what we're talking about. So if you're a complete non-believer and you listen to this, about, I don't understand anything you're saying. Well, that's because this isn't geared towards that. But again, if you listen and get something out of it, more power to you. I'm not denying that to you or saying you shouldn't be listening. assuming that you have some understanding. You can ask any Christian believer, even these ones in the out there floating around happy oblivion of the MCC, and ask him, do you know about Job? You know, if you were trying to explain what we're talking about today, it would be extremely frustrating. But if you were, and you're like, I know you people basically don't do the Old Testament because God was quote unquote meaner back then. But are you at least familiar with the story of the book of Job? And most Christians say, oh, yeah, yeah, I know about Job. Yep, 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 I've heard of that guy. You say, well, what happens in the book of Job? Well, you see, Job has all this bad stuff happening because God was mean. Job has all this bad stuff happening. And then his friends show up, and then they just start accusing him of a bunch of stuff and acting really ugly towards him. And then God shows up and tells his friends they're wrong and Job was right all along. And then God makes Job rich. The end. I obviously I'm oversimplifying here, but that would probably sum up your average Christian's understanding of the book of Job. Have y'all read the book? Reread it. Because it's way more to it than that. When you read the book of Job, I'll say the first thing I'll say, his friends' arguments. You know, yes, his friends show up to comfort him. For starters, they don't show up just to be assholes to him. They show up and they see his abysmal state. And for a while, they sit there for days on end, don't even speak. It's so, they it's so bad. They don't even know what to say. And when they start having this discussion, I'll tell you this, his friends' arguments are actually compelling. You know, if you actually read it and listen to the arguments his friends make, it's actually pretty compelling stuff. They're not just throwing out nonsense out there. You know, now, when you look at it carefully, you understand where they're getting things wrong. They're making a lot of assumptions, like they know what's going on. And ultimately, they themselves and Job make the same mistake. And we'll get to that here in a minute. You see, they're making their arguments as though they know exactly what God is thinking. That's why we highlighted this Psalm 92nd, Psalm 5 through 6. You see, they think they understand what God must be up to. It's quite simple. You've had disaster fall upon you. That means you've done something really bad and you deserve it. Again, they weren't being mean. This is the way they understood it, and they couldn't comprehend the idea that they don't understand God, that his thoughts and his reasoning is way beyond what they could grasp. Pride. There's no way. Now, what's interesting to me about this, people make the same mistake today. Really, when you think about it, is this not the flip side of the coin of these prosperity preachers that go on TV and say, oh, you need $100,000 and you only have 10? I got good news for you today, brother. If you look here in the Bible, it says God will bless you tenfold. If you will give me your TV preacher, because you can't, if you give your $10,000 to God right now, to Jesus right now, to go towards my fund to get my new jet airplane, then you know what? God is going to bless you with $100,000 written here in the Bible, and God cannot lie. Well, you can't give the $10,000 to God, but you know what, brother? I'm here, and I need a new jet airplane. If you'll send me the $10,000, then you will get $100,000, because that's what it says in the Bible. 10 times 10 is 100, right? They were making the flip side of the argument of the prosperity preachers. See, the prosperity preachers say, if you give me money, God's going to give you more money. End of story. That God will bless you. They were saying, if you do bad things are going to, you know, God is going to come down and literally punish you. And that's why these bad things have happened to you. Now, I want to stick with talking about Job here and this idea of understanding God, God's justice, God himself. And getting ahead of yourself and thinking, you know. Now see, as this argument between Job and his friends goes on, it gets heated. It gets a little more, you know, so we say a little more heated, a little more passionate as it goes along. And remember, we said earlier that ultimately both Job and his friends make the same error of thinking they understand, you know, what God must be thinking. In the heat, in the heat and passion of their back and forth, as Job is defending his integrity, because they're basically saying he deserves this, and so obviously he's like, I don't know where I've deserved this. See, Job is complaining because God is denying him justice. The way he is, these things that have befallen him are not just. And Job, in his defense, ultimately gets to the point he demands. He says, look, where's my accuser? Where is God? If God will show up and tell me what I've done, then I'll accept it. No, I will accept it. But where is he at? Why does God not get here? If God were to come here and tell me what I've done, then I could face my accuser. Then I could defend myself. Where is he? I have all this stuff happening to me, and he won't even show up to tell me what I've done. Y'all are saying this is happening to me because I can imagine that at this point, like I said, you know, it's like when you get into a heated debate with somebody, it doesn't start off heated. You make your points and you make your rebuttal. But then everybody gets a little more heated, a little more passionate, a little more zealous about their position, and things get a little out of hand and got a little out of hand. And understandably so. You know, you want to talk about disaster falling on somebody, disaster truly fell upon Job. Where is God? Why didn't he show up and tell me what I've done? Because all of this has happened to me. I want to know. Because I'm telling you, I haven't done anything wrong. Well, you know the old story about be careful what you wish for. God shows up. Now, again, I was talking earlier about the simplistic view, the simplistic understanding of the book of Job that most people have. God showed up and told all this fancy was wrong. No. What's the first thing God does when he shows up? The first thing he does is rebuke Job. Not his friends, Job. And again, you read the book of Job yourself. It's good. It's always worth a reread. But essentially, when God shows up, he tells Job, okay, I'm here now. And essentially, what he tells Job is, who do you think you are? Seriously, who do you think you are? I created this entire plane of existence that you're standing on. I created Leviathan. I created these things that make you tremble in fear. The mountains, the rivers, beasts of the field, beasts in the woods, predators that could easily hunt you down as if you were nothing. Who are you? You're going to question me? Who do you think you are? See, people don't understand that part. The first thing he does is he says, who do you think you are? And Job, of course, immediately, because again, Job was a man of integrity. Things got a little heated in his situation. It's understandable. But Job immediately understands his error and repents of it. Yes, then indeed, God does turn to his friends and tell them, essentially, it's the same mistake. Who do you think? You don't know what I'm doing. You've been sitting here arguing like you know everything that's in my mind. You don't know anything in my mind. You cannot grasp who I am. And, of course, God proves that he is just. But again, he starts right out. Job gets rebuked first. Who do you think you are? Look at those two verses we've read today. The things of God, the thoughts of God is deep. The brutish man and the fool knoweth not. You cannot understand it. A better way to think of that, because the brutish man, the fool, the foolish man knoweth not. The brutish man, but I would add to that carefully as an addendum. What I mean is, I wouldn't add to it physically, like write onto it. But what I would add for understanding is the brutish man and the foolish man knoweth not, but think they do. They think they know. That is the hallmark of a brutish and foolish man. The fool thinks he knows all about it. I've never run into a fool who just isn't so ready to tell you how much he knows all about something that he hasn't got a clue about. It's a hallmark of a fool. The fool is always ready to tell you what he doesn't know while thinking he knows all about it. They know it or not, but they think they do. They think they know all about God's thoughts. Now, circling this back, this is how people, this is related to this error where people turned their back on the concept of God being just and replaced with the concept of themselves being fair. They see things or they read things, as for instance in the Old Testament, and they don't understand it. They don't understand it, and so it's just not fair. This, my own fairness seems kind of superior to this idea of God's justice. We need more fairness. That's better. You know, if you get rid of something and replace it with something else, you're doing so because you think it's superior, right? If you go and trade your car in and get another car, it's because the car you're getting, nobody trades their car in, their good car in, to buy a hoopty, right? You trade your car in to get another car because you think the car you're getting is superior to the one you're getting rid of. Anytime you choose to cast off the things of God to replace it with something else, you would only do that if you think the thing you're replacing it with is superior, right? Cast off the idea of God's justice, God being just, for this new concept of fairness. And again, the fool thinks there's not any difference, but it is. It is. You get rid of one thing when every time, and we're just talking about one singular aspect of the Lord today. That's all we got time. We've done burned 30 minutes here talking about just justice. Anytime you get rid of the, and there's way more things of the Lord. Basically, just about every aspect of the Lord has been discarded by the people collectively. Individuals, enough individuals have made that decision that now you have this collective outcome as a group. And this is just justice. This is just justice. And we look around at the state of things and everybody's in wonder. They just act like, how did this happen? It's just a total mystery. How did we get here? We got here by this listening to the same old lies. Same old lies. Listening to the same old lies, making the same errors, thinking we know better. Individual people collectively have made, enough of them have made that decision. This is where we are today. This is why I laugh at the idea that somebody, you're going to vote for somebody or this or that and change things for the better. Individual people have got to turn back to God, have got to repent, which means they themselves have got to start taking different action. Not be like the criminal who gets caught and, oh, he's sorry. He's sorry his ass fixing to go to prison is what he's sorry for. That isn't repentance. It means taking a different action to correct your behavior. Enough individual people would have to turn back to God and take corrective steps, admit that they're wrong. And if enough individual people did that, your society would change. I don't care what government you got. I don't care what they're doing, because it would become irrelevant. When you got 1 or 2% of the population with all the money and making all the shots, calling all the shots and making all the decisions, wielding all the power, that means you got 98% of the people that could tell them to stick it up their ass and they couldn't do anything about it. But instead you got 98% of the people, for all practical purposes, going along with it. If enough individual people repent and turn towards the Lord, you would start seeing a collective change. Right now, I don't see that. I'm sorry, I don't. Maybe I'm jaded, but I don't see it. I see people complaining about the consequences of their rebellion. Oh, there's no shortage of people bitching and moaning about the consequences of their rebellion. Don't see very many people wanting to take corrective action. Not in their own lives. They're ready for everybody else to take corrective action in their lives. That's why Jesus said, start picking the log out of your own eye. Don't be worrying about everybody else. You have control over yourself. I'm getting a little off topic. I need to wrap it up, but that's why I said, would you just keep going? Everybody ready for somebody else to take corrective action? They themselves? No. That's what I'm saying. If the people themselves don't get over and repent of their corruption, of the lies, this adds another element of how difficult it is, because they got to admit they were wrong. They got to admit they were conned. You see these people. I could keep going. You see these people, and they're being interviewed, and they've been scammed, like some lady, you know, some fat older woman, and she was convinced that some, you know, this guy that's been emailing her back and forth from Nigeria is some Hollywood star that's in love with her, and she winds up giving him the tens of thousands of dollars of her life savings. And she still, even when she's like, there's an intervention and people are pointing out how ridiculous this is, and she's still arguing, no, he really loves me. It's really him. We're going to go off on his yacht next week. It's difficult because yes, you got scammed, but it's difficult to admit that you were wrong, that you got scammed. People are going to have to admit they got scammed. They believed a lie. You're going to have to. You're not more fair. The devil's not leading you to you. The devil is not leading you to utopia. And that guy from Nigeria is not Brad Pitt. We got to wrap up on that note. I appreciate you stopping by. I hope you got something out of the show. Dr. Johnson will be here tomorrow with his Orthodox Nationalist show, and he'll be here Thursday to wrap our week up. We have bankers hours. We take 3-day weekends every week. And he'll be here to wrap up on the Thursday Daily Nationalist. I hope you'll have time to check all that out as well. And of course, as always, I hope to see you back here next week for the Parish of the Patriots.